dbkmediaservices.com.
You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, Shane Combs, Matt Combs, and Jeremy Ward.
Hello, SVC fans. We're back for another week of the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk podcast show. I'm Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com, and I'll be joined by my brother Matt and Jeremy Ward here in just a second. But first, there's some things really exciting this week as I start to get some feedback on the show and on the website. I know there's some young kids who had seen their name in the box score on some of our scoreboard pages for the first time, and I kind of heard from some of their coaches how appreciative they were. And you know, those are always neat things to hear, and we try to get as many kids involved as possible. And you know, rarely will a coach give me some information or send something to me and I'm not able to put it on the site in some way. So we really encourage people to get involved and take advantage of the media source. One kid who is more than used to seeing her name on SVCSportsZone.com with the incredible career she's put together on the volleyball court is Haley Carl of Zane Trace. And this past week, Haley, of course, recorded kill 1,000 for her career and just an incredible accomplishment. And one feature we've been using, Shoutomatic. And for those of you who do not know, Shoutomatic is basically like Facebook, but done by voice. I am able to keep people posted on score updates and other big events, such as Carl reaching this incredible mark the other night. Here's how it sounded on Shoutomatic Thursday night.
SVC fans, this is Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com. Just putting a wrap on this Thursday night around the volleyball league. Westfall State's perfect straight set winner over Paint Valley. Adina straight set went over Piketon, including a 25-1 set where Carly Bauer started with 24 straight points behind the service line. I can also tell you that Uniota defeated Huntington in four, but probably the story of the night, Zane Trace in a straight set went over Southeastern. Senior Haley Carl goes over the 1,000th career mark, so congratulations to Haley. Make sure you check out the website. Hope to have some pictures and details of that milestone for the very talented senior out there, Zane Trace, and as well as, of course, the normal scores and stats and updated standings. And then make sure you join me Friday night. Week 5, Football Friday Night, a big one out there in Kinnikinick. I'll be out covering that one as well as getting updates around the league. I'll make sure I keep you posted. Football tomorrow night. So,
again, that's our Shoutomatic feature on SVCSportsZone.com. And if you follow SVC Sports Zone on Facebook, Twitter, you'll get those releases. You can also just go straight on the site and look for the Shoutomatic up top, and you can listen to those. Over 12,000 listens on our SVC Sports Zone Shoutomatic page. Real excited about that. I know people giving me some nice feedback, and so definitely wanted to make sure the fans were aware of that. Well, Matt, let's get into the show here, and let's go ahead and start with this incredible milestone. If we're connecting it to some different sports, obviously I know you as a player, you scored 1,000 career points your junior year. I believe it was down at the Convo. Your senior year at home, actually a game I was lucky enough to be on the court my freshman year playing with you. You score your 1,500th point as you eventually went on to score over 1,700. But as you think about some of those milestone moments, obviously you're playing a team sport, but individually with all the hard work a kid puts in, those individual moments definitely have to be special. Just share a little bit from a player's perspective what that feeling's like.
Well, obviously it is a special moment for you, and something that, like you said, you've put in a lot of hard work to be a good player, and you know, it is a milestone, and I think it's an honor, no doubt about it. But I also think it's a great moment for the team. You know, I think that obviously it in volleyball, when you have 1,000 kills, you didn't get those all by yourself. You know, somebody had to set you up for those, and it's a team sport. And I think when you, especially if everybody's heart's in the right place and everybody's rooting for everybody like you hope they are on a team, it's definitely a moment for the whole team to really enjoy.
Jeremy, when you think of milestones, you think of obviously an incredible career accomplishment. These things don't happen just with getting hot for a month your senior year or such. Yeah, it's a consistency thing over usually at least three, most of the time 4 year commitment. You obviously got to get a little bit of luck. You got to be injury free. Just your overall thoughts on the accomplishment.
Well, first of all, just congratulations and a tremendous accomplishment. And, you know, just kind of piggybacking off what Matt said, when you have the opportunity to experience a milestone like that and do it beside kids that you've accomplished that with, you know, with Pontius and with Strasbaugh, kids that the majority of her time since she started, you know, even in junior high, playing with those same girls, I think that means a lot. As compared to maybe playing your career and then your senior season, maybe being a lone senior and you feel a little more isolated. So I'm sure she appreciates all the time that she's put in, all the sweat and the good times and the bad that she's put in with those girls and in various sports. But yeah, you say it every year. We see the injuries in girls athletics that, you know, are hard on the SVC, and she's been lucky there. And that's a big part of it. You know, you're going to have to go through different roles, playing different roles to accomplish those sometimes. So just an impressive feat. And boy, she's exciting to watch, and it doesn't matter what spot in the rotation. You know, really, she plays it well all the way through.
What's funny you say that there, Jeremy, because the one thing I know you and I, as much as we love sports and we love to sit together at games and analyze things and break things down, you know, Haley's a kid that I was looking at the numbers today. I would say she's really close to being a 1,000 player in terms of kills and digs. I'm not sure the exact number of digs, but I got to thinking who else could hit this 1,000 kill milestone. I thought of Lexi Overly probably a year from now will be there.
Right.
Delana Gregg as a sophomore and Ricky McGill as a freshman. If you look at their numbers in comparison, they're at least on pace for their respective years. I'm not sure about Leah Pelfrey. I know she's had a monster senior year. I'm not sure. That might be something to research a little bit. But I wanted to throw this at you, Jeremy. Not just the hitters. If we look at some of the great players at other positions and we look at some of the things they're accomplishing, what would be the milestone number? I started to crunch the numbers a little bit, and if I look at in terms of per game and what kids are able to play, maybe in somewhere between the 85 to 100 match number throughout their career, I thought maybe digs might be around 1,500. I didn't know if assists would be fair to be on the even plateau with that at 1,500. I know Lytle of Huntington's probably on pace for like a 2,000 career dig, maybe even Haley Ingram at Huntington. I have her really pushing right around the 1750 mark, give or take right now. That's not official. She's got a shot at 2,000 assists. Even the Dawson girl now running a 5-1 offense for Adina for the second year in a row. It looks like she's going to go over 1,000 just in 2 years, and she'll still have her senior year left. What maybe number jumps out at you, Jeremy, as a fair mark on digs and assists and just your overall thought at those particular positions being a little different than the person attacking the net?
Well, that's a good question. And digs, maybe that 1,000 number is a good number. I think you mentioned Elena, but look, there's, you know, most years she's putting up almost twice as many as what you would consider to be a good average. And opportunities, you know, for digs may not be, you know, that may come a little harder.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you're certainly going to have more opportunities if you're a libero or strictly a back row player as compared to somebody that plays all the way around. You only have so many opportunities. But in the assists, I don't know. I think you made a good point there too as well. You know, what kind of offense are you playing? And if you're the lone setter, then, you know, you're going to have more opportunities for assists. So maybe that 1,500 is more of a fair mark with assists. But volleyball, it's so different than other sports in terms of how the system you play relates to your stats. And it's really hard to compare player to player depending on the system that they, you know, came through with.
Well, Matt, let me go back to you here. I love the point you made in your original answer there. And there's two things I want you to talk to us about here. One, when we look at it from a team perspective, you talked about how obviously a hitter does not get the opportunity to attack the amount of times that a number one hitter should, if you're not passing the ball well in serve receive, if you're not setting the ball properly. So it is a team concept, and a lot of times when a kid reaches a milestone, such as a 1,000-point score in basketball, it can highlight maybe a point guard. Or if you have a 1,000-yard receiver, it obviously is going to highlight the quarterback a little bit, or even maybe the offensive line or the whole unit. The other side of this that I think that you started to touch on, you can tell a lot about a kid and what kind of leader and what type of person they must be when you see how excited their teammates get for them. We had a photo sent in to us of this moment the other night, and you could tell how happy the kids were for Haley. And I think, doesn't that tell you a lot about the kid? Just talk to us a little bit again about that team concept, how it can really highlight the entire group, but at the same time tell us a lot about that person as a person and not just a player.
Well, I think they go hand in hand, and I think when you start looking at the accomplishment as a whole, again, in almost every sport, you can make the argument that if a person reaches a milestone, it was in large part due to some of the people they played with and the help that they had. You know, having the good teammates to put them in a position to show off their skill sets, and I think, like you say, if kids that are really good teammates and really go about their business in the right way, I think it's really easy for their teammates to be happy for them. I mean, I know you, as an example, Shane, played with 2,000-point scorers on the same team. You talk about, when that happens, it's really an incredible feat because two guys are getting a great deal of offensive opportunities, and that means that they have some really good teammates around them accepting their role and doing their thing. And I think you could probably speak to that in terms of the gratification that you get when you see teammates accomplish great things, because most likely when you have a player of this caliber and you mix her or him in with good teammates, you probably also have a good team. So it's a lot of fun. You know, I mean, you're probably winning and you're having sure. success. So yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, when you see the other kids react so positively to it, and you can tell that it's authentic and genuine, I think it says a lot about that player who reached that accomplishment of being humble and unselfish and all those things.
Well, it really is, and it's a really neat topic, and I want to encourage the fans to give us the most impressive milestones in high school sports. What are they? Are they going to change a little bit with basketball going to 22? In your mind, does it change? Tell us the sport. Tell us the number. Give us your reason. We want to hear them. 740-569-3254. And again, we're looking at any sport. What's some of the milestones that you think are the most impressive when a student athlete reaches that particular number? Well, guys, we have a great show ahead. We talked about chances to strike gold for a few teams in a few different sports. But first, we look at a sport that is quietly putting together perhaps the most successful fall season of any sport. Well, guys, when I talk quietly putting together the most successful fall season of any sport, I'm actually talking golf. I know, obviously, with volleyball, and rightfully so, they get a lot of credit for being really elite around Southeast Ohio. Football's looking like maybe a chance at a team or two in the playoffs, but in soccer, some good teams. But when you really look at golf and what they're doing, they really are quietly representing the SVC in the postseason about as well as possible. I just want to read a couple things here before I get to a couple comments from Jeremy and Matt, just to make sure the fans know. Division II girls, the Westfall team, as well as Huntington Shania Irvin. Irvin was the sectional champion individually. They play on Tuesday at Blacklick Woods Golf Course in Reynoldsburg. If I'm reading that correct, out of the Central District, they get five teams, five individuals out. Division II boys, Uniota team, Adena team, Piketon team, and then Southeastern's Eli McKee, Westfall's Andrew Potensky. They will be at the familiar Pickaway Country Club. And I say familiar because those guys just played 18 holes in the SVC match here this past week. And then Tyler Thompson in the Division III, Paint Valley senior, the player of the year in our conference. If I'm reading that one right, that he's being shipped out to the East District out in West Lafayette. That's over in Coshocton County at River Greens Golf Course. Now, Matt, we did recognize a name there. What did you notice when you and I were looking up that golf course that might be in Tyler's favor there a little bit?
Well, we noticed that it was a Jack Kidwell design, and if I'm not mistaken, that's the same design, the same guy who designed JC's. And I can remember Dan Drummond still to this day telling us when we were in high school, Jack Kidwell design courses, all green, slope from front to back, and there's certain characteristics about them. So I've never played that particular golf course in West Lafayette, but there may be some similarities to JC's because, like I said, if I'm not mistaken, they're both designed by Jack Kidwell.
Well, it's an interesting point, Matt, because I know some coaches who have had kids advance to this level at this particular course. I know I talked to Eric Snyder. Eric had some outstanding golfers with Kyle Litter and Jay Daly and some of those Paint Valley kids. I know I talked to Rick McGill a little bit. His son, obviously a former player of the year, the Irvin kid was a player of the year at Huntington, so they've had some representation. So they were talking to me about some of these courses, and they kind of echo a little bit what you're saying there. Jeremy, let me ask you this here about this time of year playing golf. I've always felt like being a former high school player myself and now just playing, or at least trying to play these days, thoughts on keeping the game together as we reach fall. The temperature starts to get a little cooler. Obviously, atmosphere changes a little bit on the course. The leaves start to fall there a little bit. The wind usually becomes a little bit more of a factor. What are some of the changes or differences, maybe even challenges, that you think high school kids get into as they reach postseason?
When you get to this part of the fall, I think it really starts to separate the really good players from the streaky or the just solid players. And what I mean by that is early fall, a lot of times that's the best case scenario for a golfer. The conditions are generally favorable. Winds are light. You're getting a little extra roll when you hit the ball. I just think things work in your favor. But as you get towards October, the weather's not quite as cooperative. You're going to be playing nicer courses. You're going to have to deal with real legitimate rough. You might have to deal with 35 degree temperatures when you're starting out in the morning. You might have to deal with, 25, 30 mile per hour plus winds. So it's really going to separate the mental toughness of a player because the physical elements aren't going to be consistent necessarily. So, I think it's really that mental aspect and the combination of what your skills are and how well you can prepare yourself to handle adversity.
Well, Matt, another thing about the postseason that some people have talked a lot about, in fact, in talking to 3-4 people, they've mentioned it is a big difference here in this past week with some of the scores that I saw posted, talking about playing the ball down. And I was just wondering how much you think this is a factor for a solid high school player. Obviously, if you're in the district tournament, you're a pretty solid player. And is it something you think the SVC needs to start doing? Are we giving our kids maybe a disadvantage not doing it throughout the year? And I guess I'd have to follow that up with, are our courses good enough to do that?
Well, to address the last issue you said there with the courses being good enough, that's where it gets a little tricky, to be honest with you. I mean, when you start talking about playing the ball down everywhere, playing it down in the rough's a no-brainer. If you hit it in the rough, that's just part of the punishment. And you have to take your medicine there, because if you let kids roll it in the rough, then you get into things. Well, kids behind a tree rolls just a little too far, to get out from under there. But in the fairway, I think typically on a lot of the courses our kids play around here, that I'm assuming they play it up in the fairway, down in the rough. Is that what they normally do?
It varies, to be honest. I mean, right. I've seen it done just a little bit of every way you can think.
And I'll be honest with you, and on most courses around here, that's probably the way you should play it. There are a couple exceptions. There are some courses that are probably nice enough just to play it down everywhere. But what you get into with some of the public courses, they get a lot of play, and you might run into some rough spots out in the fairway that you would have to, one of the golf course superintendent or whatever, if you're really being fair, would have to go out and mark those areas with field paint or whatever. And that puts some extra work on him, you know, sure. Every time they have a league match. And because if a kid's in the middle of the fairway, obviously you don't want him hitting out of a huge dirt spot that just happened to be somebody drove a cart through there when it was wet and left a big rut, that type of thing, you know. And those are some of the things you don't run into probably as you get a little bit further along and play some of the nicer courses. But to be honest with you, these courses that they're playing right here at this level, they're nice golf courses, but let's make no mistake, they're not so plush that you're not going to have some questionable lies even in the fairways. You know, now it's a different story when you get to state tournament, you're playing Scarlet. But right now you still have these issues. So yeah, I mean it's a little controversial to an extent. You'd hate to see a kid you know, lose by a shot and his ball was laying in some ridiculously bad area that wasn't marked and he wasn't allowed to move it. You know, but again, that's golf. You know, anybody that's ever played golf know that those bad breaks are part of the game. How you watch these guys play on TV, all of a sudden their ball comes to rest in a divot. Tough luck. You know what I mean? You got to play it out of there. So the game, I think Jeremy would probably agree with this, the game was meant for the ball not to be touched. I mean, plain and simple. That was the way the game was invented. So you could make the argument maybe they should just play it down all the time anyway.
Well, let me ask. I want to talk to both of you about this. Matt, I'll just stay with you real quick. You know, both of you guys on most of the local courses we're talking about, when we go out and play together, your goal is to shoot in the 70s. Even when you don't really have your best game, you want to bulldog a low 80s round. So let me just ask you guys as good players. Matt, if you play the ball down, say out at JC's in an 18-hole round, what kind of difference, if any, do you think that's going to add to your score?
Well, it's probably bound to add a couple shots, you know, I'd say, unless you just get extremely fortunate and don't hit it anywhere where you shouldn't. Because, there, you know, like I said, when you play, you know, 18 holes of golf on a public course, it's a nice course, but not, you know, it's not like, you know, what you see on television when you watch guys play golf.
Right.
You're bound to probably have situations where you just have a bad lie, you know, and that's bound to add shots, had a shot here and there. Obviously, if you're mentally tough enough and you're really grinding, you're not going to let it maybe add more than one shot. You're going to try to bulldog through it, but it could cost you a shot here and there. So it definitely makes a difference. There's no question about it.
Well, Jeremy, I know you always have a neat perspective on just some of the setup of golf courses when we go out and play various courses together. Your thoughts on this topic?
I really think that whenever possible, they should play the ball down. I think that's something that, you know, when I was growing up, when I was learning to play, maybe did me a disservice because I did played mostly in the fall when I was in high school and even after that. It really kind of spoils you. And as I've gotten older and I play the ball down now to have a legitimate handicap, and it is, and it's two or three shots difference. But what happens is you worry a little bit, you know, a little less about it. It's not quite a big of a shock if you get put in a bad spot. And, you know, it just kind of tests your mettle. And like Matt said, you just have to grind through it. And that's what golf is. Golf's a grind as it is. You know, it doesn't matter how good your last shot was. You're just a bad break away from a disaster. So, you know, that's kind of my feelings on that. And it is hard in the fall. There's all kinds of stuff going on. Maybe they aerated 2 weeks ago. It's difficult on the players. But, you know, from my perspective, it's just good habits to just get in the habit of playing the ball down as much as you possibly can.
Well, obviously, makes for good discussion on one of the biggest challenges the particular list of teams and individuals are going to face. We are not done with SVC golf. They'll be back here in the 2-minute drill discussion later on, and we'll give some predictions on what we hope to see here in this upcoming week. But for now, fans, stay with us. On the other side of the break, Matt will take the lead, and Jeremy and I will go back and forth in a little fair, unfair volleyball debate.
Well, we have Westfall now 10-0 in volleyball in the Soto Valley Conference, 14-0 overall. Obviously having a great year. Uniota's two back, and Zane Trace now three back. So I think it goes without saying when Westfall visits Uniota Tuesday night, that becomes an awfully big showdown there. I want to throw, I know obviously Shane, Jeremy, you guys, you know, watch a lot of volleyball. So we're going to put you on the spot here a little bit and throw some fair, unfair at you. First up, fair, unfair. Piketon's upset win over Huntington is enough to keep Aaliyah Pelfrey in the Player of the Year race.
Well, I can see that being fair. You've certainly seen the difference in Piketon and their ability to compete and at least stretch the matches to four games against the upper-level teams at times. And just a tremendous match against Huntington. And Aaliyah really does it all for that Piketon team and makes it easier for those young kids that they've worked in as freshmen and sophomore really to feel like, you know, she can pick them up. And I guess maybe to me that takes it back to the question, is it Player of the Year or is it most valuable player? When it comes to most valuable, I would agree wholeheartedly. But with some of the talent on the top-tier teams, maybe a little unfair for Player of the Year.
Well, I think the wording of this, Jeremy, I think you're onto something there because, you know, maybe it is a little unfair in terms of winning the award, but if we're going to look at it from the standpoint of enough to keep Aaliyah in the discussion, absolutely fair. When I look around the Player of the Year race, obviously the name Carl and Curry and Phillips with the Westfall year they're having, depending on what your opinion of defensive specialist the year Lytle's putting together, Overly at Uniota is obviously very, very good. But when I look at Aaliyah Pelfrey, I think the one thing I find, I talk to a lot of friends who are getting more and more into volleyball but maybe don't totally understand the game, and the one thing I try to get them to understand is it's not football where you can turn and hand it to your featured back 35 times. It's not basketball where you can come down and, you know, basically run the same kid off a double screen or ball screen or whatever it is. The volleyball rules force you to come across the front row three rotations, come across the back, and you can get stuck in a variety of rotations where there's only so much an individual can do to impact the game. So I think what she's done, I know in the Huntington win that was talked about there in the statement, 29 kills, 13 blocks. And I talked to some people about that. They basically said there was a stretch in the match where she just went to the front row and just completely took the match over, particularly in the fourth and fifth sets. I think it's very fair for her to be in the discussion. I think it says a lot about her as a leader too, because the all around improvement of a Peyton Reuter and things like that at the setter position. I think Aaliyah's had an outstanding senior season.
Fair or unfair? Hannah Wallace has been the single biggest difference maker in this year's volleyball title chase.
I definitely think that's fair. Immediately caught my eye when I was able to go up and catch Westfall early in the year, and then just following the matches to see her continual impact. And I thought they made a good point when I was listening to their match on the radio last week about how she really was the X factor to go along with Curry and Phillips that just keeps you from. You know you're going to get beat at those two spots in their rotation when they come along the front row, and then when they add that third, and with the athletes they surround around them in the back, you know, Hannah Wallace has made a huge impact on that team, and just tremendous for Westfall so far this year. So I think that's very fair.
Yeah, Jeremy, I mean, when I read the wording of this one, I guess I went unfair just out of respect to what Curry and Phillips have meant individually to that going on, even attack at a Williams and Arledge, I think, in terms of the whole team and what they're doing. But I do agree with you from a fair perspective when you look at it this way. If I go back to Zane Trace's team last year, what really separated them was the ability to have Carl, Strasbaugh, and Spetnagel in the ability not to only attack at the net, but to defend and play all the way around and do a lot of different things, serve tough and so forth. This year, you really see that with Wallace. I guess if there's one positive of the Curry injury last year, it was how much Wallace had come on in the middle. And now that Curry is back healthy, those three give you such an attack at the net. There's one or two particular rotations that Westfall can sometimes get stuck in, and I really think Wallace becomes an X factor because it's not just her ability to record the kill. I really think she's one of the most underrated defenders at the net. She can really go up, play the ball well with two hands, really squares the shoulders well, and can do a lot of things, blocking and so forth, or at least getting a touch to help, you know, the back row keep a ball in play. So obviously that trio together, depending on how you want to look at the wording of this fair unfair, that trio of Westfall definitely seems to be why at this point they're undefeated, and obviously they're going to play a very balanced Uniota attack here Tuesday night that is now a little bit healthier maybe than the last time they met, and it'll be exciting to see how that plays out.
We'll go with one more. Fair unfair. In her second year removed from knee surgery, a healthy Taylor Overly has proven to be the most improved player in the SVC.
And honestly, in the previous question, the first thing that came to my mind the first time I read that was the impact of Taylor Overly.
Yeah.
So with this being the next question, we just leave it for that. But, you know, Taylor's athleticism has really shown up. I think now that she is back to, like you said, being 2 years removed and being herself, and she's really grown into her role. And there's been times where she's been dominant. And with her left-handed attack, you talk about the balance of Uniota, but there's been times where she's really turned the tide of a match, and really given them the ability to, you know, eliminate teams, you know, step on their throat, if you will, and just put them away. Because just when you think you've got Lexi taken care of on one side, or Neff or White, then the lefty's killing you on the backside.
Yeah, I think this – now, the one thing I did caution myself here is I tried to be fair to kids throughout the league. You know, when I look at a Kirsten Dawson and Adina, the improvement she's made athletically from the 5-1 setter position. But then again, I look back and she was averaging 8.5 assists last year. So she obviously was very productive last year. Peyton Reuter, I mentioned her earlier from Piketon, very improved. Aaron Riley having a good senior season there for Paint Valley. But, yeah, I think this is fair. Taylor's come a long way. I remember sitting down on floor level the night she was warming up at the preview, and I was just amazed after watching her come back last year, just watching her spring off the floor and some of the things she was able to do in her all-around game. I know, unfortunately, I was sitting floor level the night against Vinton County her freshman year when that happened in basketball, and it was just an awful situation to watch a young kid who's put so much time into sports go through that. But now, because of that, it's very rewarding to me to see a kid 2 years later work so hard to get back. Everybody I've talked to who's gone through a knee situation like that talks about the long road, and to see her come all the way back and do the things she does. And that balanced attack, Uniota is a team that will utilize the weak side more than anybody at the net. I think that's a credit to Overly and Steinbrook with their ability to set the back set and get kids involved. And obviously having that left-handed weapon there really makes Uniota tough to defend.
Well, you guys always do a good job with volleyball discussion, but on the other side of the break, we're going to move to football and see if we can make some sense out of what we've watched the past 5 weeks.
Well, Jeremy and Matt, Bruce adding a little fan request, if you will, in there for one Chris Eldridge. So I know Chris is a weekly listener of the show. Hope Chris enjoys a little music there. Compliments of Bruce there with DBK Media Services. But as
well,
we move on,
I can tell you, Chris loves Nirvana. I mean, he really credits Nirvana with making music what it is today. So I know he'll appreciate that.
And during the break, I slipped off and changed into a cutoff shirt.
Well, you got to dress the part. Very good.
as much as I would be entertained to listen to you two talk about Chris Eldridge, we're going to go into SVC football. And we're going to talk out in Kenny Canick Friday night. Paint Valley beats Zane Trace in what was a really good football game. If you followed me on Shout-O-Matic, the shouts were coming. It seemed like every 10 minutes early on as there's a lot of scoring. The defense has started to settle in. And then as good as the Paint Valley offense was, really, the difference in the game comes down to two defensive touchdowns from Paint Valley. Mark Clifford and Tony Hatfield both pick up fumbles and take them to the house, and that ends up being the difference in the game. I thought Zane Trace's kicking game, Montana Fry with a field goal and some PATs throughout the night, keeping Zane Trace within striking distance. Actually, the field goal that was kicked to cut it to 18-10 was almost a victory for Paint Valley. That was a 17-play drive. They had it all the way to second and goal from the one. Couldn't really tell what happened. It looked like the quarterback went to pitch it one way, the running back went the other, somewhat of a busted play. I could be wrong on that. That's just the way I observed it. And the loss of yardage led to a field goal at the time, made it 18-10. But at that point, really kind of a victory for Paint Valley. So, as we move forward there, we had Westfall beat Piketon, Edina beats Huntington, Southeastern beats Uniota. So we have Paint Valley and Westfall 2-0 in the league. And I guess, Matt, I'll start with you. Let's try to make this as open-ended as possible when we're talking football, because football is just kind of hard to figure out this particular year. I guess as we're halfway home, what is it that you know from the first 5 weeks, and what is it that you still need to find out?
Well, I think you know that Paint Valley is as good as advertised, and you know they go through the non-league schedule. You know, you wondered coming into league play, okay, you know how are they going to react? They had a tough test, obviously, against Zane Trace. I think a lot of people felt like Zane Trace was one of the teams that could challenge them. You know, and from what you told me being out there, that was a pretty good football game, and so I think you got to give a lot of credit to Paint Valley to this point. And after that, I think what you're really seeing in the SVC is a lot of teams kind of being in the same boat in terms of some youth and some rebuilding. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Because you got Westfall, who obviously, from listening to their coach talk, you know, is young, trying to kind of find themselves. Well, here they are 2-0. And the nice thing for them is, I know he mentioned on the scoreboard show a couple weeks ago, they do have a few weeks to maybe mature a little bit before they run into Paint Valley. The schedule has a lot to do with it, you know, in football, because if sure. you're a young team and you're trying to kind of get your team to that point where they can really compete with one of the better teams in the league, and you have to play those guys week one in league play, that makes it awful tough, you know, as compared to maybe getting to play them later. But I think when you look at Westfall and Piketon and, you know, obviously Huntington, you're talking about some teams that lost a lot and are trying to kind of find themselves a little bit. And then you've had a team like Southeastern really kind of jump up. And I don't know if it's fair to say they're a surprise. I think they've surprised me at times with what they've been able to do. And so it's one of those deals right now where outside of Paint Valley, truthfully, and maybe Zane Trace, does it really surprise you if anybody beats anybody, you know, on a given night in this league?
Well, Jeremy, let me throw the same two questions to you. Is you've watched over the 5 week period now, what's something that you're pretty confident you know, but something you're still wanting to find out?
Well, the easy confidence is Paint Valley, obviously. And I do think that, you know, there's a great deal of parity there in the middle. And I think that sets up for some great football. I think you saw some exciting games this past week, and I think we'll continue to see that as the season rolls on. And, you know, teams now have a great deal of film on each other, and you're not going to surprise anybody at this point. So I think really the coaching aspect of it comes into play in preparation, and then injuries, of course. But the other thing is, you know, Westfall sits at 2-0, and you never know quite what to think. They're replacing a lot of players. But they found a way to win last week, had a nice game, found a way to win this week. When you have a team, when you have a, a program like Westfall has, new coach, new players or not, they're used to winning. And I just think taking Westfall lightly, you know, we continue to see them there 2-0. It's going to be interesting to see if they continue to build confidence and kind of what role they're going to play in the league.
I thought the two of you made some great points talking about injury, talking about scheduling. Obviously, Piketon has one of the best football players in the entire Southeast Ohio, and Jeremy Farmer. Sounds like the other night listening to Tyler Gallion talk on the radio that, you know, he's out and they're not sure the timetable there. But when you look at the schedule, I don't see Paint Valley on Piketon's schedule until week 9. So obviously, if he comes back, first-year quarterback, 8 starts into the season with teammates like a Southworth and a healthy Jeremy Farmer, obviously you're playing a different team than playing Piketon in a week where he's not on the field. Westfall, Matt, I thought you made a great point there in terms of, you know, they'll go to Uniota, I believe, this week. Is that correct, Jeremy? Westfall at Uniota?
Westfall at Uniota, yes.
Okay, so, you know, if they survive that game, now all of a sudden that coach is an entire month into his SVC preparation before playing Paint Valley. So, yeah, there's definitely some things in scheduling and injuries. I'll tell you what, guys, this week's rapid-fire questioning starts with a football topic. Of course, this part of the show is what we call our two-minute drill. So Jeremy will go first, Matt in the middle, and I will finish up as we go to our hurry-up offense.
Last week we had Westfall Volleyball on the 1 to 10 scale in terms of winning gold. Now that Paint Valley football has survived the trip to Zane Trace, what is the likelihood of the Bearcats running the table?
I'm going to have to go with 9.5. You know, listening to last week's show and Shane pulling out the halves, I like that. So I'm not going to put the 10-0, you know, the full scale 10 for 10-0. I'm going to go 9.5.
What a fence sitter, I'm telling you. I'm just going to throw the 10 at him, man. Let the hate mail come if I'm the jinx. But I think they're going to do it. There might be one or two games in there that could be a little bit more challenging than people expect. You know, I think some teams like even a Southeastern have some big play capability. Their coach knows those kids, knows that system a little bit. But I think Paint Valley will run the table.
Well, guys, I can't make this up. You know, Matt, you always talk about how we don't get together and talk about this stuff before the show. I can honestly say down on my paper here, Jeremy, I've done you one better this week. I have 9.75. I was afraid if I went with the 10, I would totally get the emails coming in with the homer pick. But I just feel like, out of respect to the talent of what a Piketon could be healthy, Southeastern's emergence. You know, obviously the tradition of what it means to wear the Westfall football uniform, I'm sure. Just out of respect to those things, there's a lot of roadblocks still ahead, but I just feel like Paint Valley's really complete. And I think they're only going to get better as they have some young pieces themselves starting to take on bigger roles.
4 SVC teams and 4 more SVC individuals are preparing for district play in golf. How much SVC representation do you expect to see next week at the state tournament?
Well, on the girls' side, you know, if we were in confidence picks, I would be fairly confident that we'll see a great bit of representation on the girls' side from the Westfall girls and Shania. I look for all of them to move on. With the boys, kind of feel bad. You know, we talked about golf earlier, and I kind of feel bad for Tyler Thompson having to kind of be shipped off to the East where the other teams get the opportunity to play, of course, they're very familiar with. So I think that is a huge deal, and I do think we'll have at least one team and maybe two or more individuals move on.
Well, I agree with Jeremy about the girls. I think when you looked at the Westfall score in their sectional, it was pretty much not even close in their particular sectional, and I think as a team they have an excellent shot. I think the Irvin girl from Huntington has an excellent shot. When you get into the boys, you know, we talked about the D2 boys, that if we're not mistaken, you know, the two teams, two individuals, you know, Uniota as a team obviously have had a great year. if I'm not mistaken, if I look back at our front page, I believe they finished second. Is that right? In their
section, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, you know, they're going to have to overcome that team, let alone the teams that come in from other areas. So it may be a little more difficult, you know, than what some people think. But obviously, they have the capability. So I think the girls look really strong. I think team-wise, it might be a little difficult for the boys. And you never know with Tyler. If they're taking four out there and he goes over there and plays well, he's got a decent chance.
Well, on the girls' side, I think the Westfall team would be the number one confident pick. I agree with you there. Obviously, Post individually would have been one you'd think would get out, but I think she's going to get covered with her team going. And then Irvin, obviously very, very capable, being the sectional champion if she plays up to capability. So on the girls' side, I think I agree with you guys. The thing that worries me about Uniota, and you've heard me say this every year, and this is something a lot of fans aren't aware of. In our SVC play, we play six starters, and you take your top four. And Uniota's depth is the reason they're the 14-time SVC champion. When they get to the tournament, they only start five. So throughout the year, it's almost like Uniota's playing half the league 6-on-4. Well, now all of a sudden, it doesn't sound like much, but you get to the tournament, and you're just playing those five starters. Just makes it a little bit tough, a little bit more even maybe. So I think that's going to be their biggest challenge, taking on the 18-hole grind with a course that they're familiar with. But I would be shocked if at worst on the boys' side, watching how, you know, usually one or two of those particular top five, top six individuals all year play, I would be shocked if we didn't at least get a couple of boys individuals to the state.
The Inbox was looking forward to Shane's annual SVCSportsZone.com All SVC Volleyball Selections and wanted to know what part of the list will be the most difficult when ranking players in this year's crazy league.
Well, you know, I kind of hit it on earlier, talking about the difference in positions, the difference in the systems that various teams may run, both offensively and defensively. So when you look at statistics for volleyball as a component in selection for all league, it's really apples to oranges. It's really difficult to compare kids to other kids that might be in a different scenario. The other thing that comes to mind in difficulty is there's so many good players. So many good players. And when you're talking about distinguishing maybe your elite players, it's not as difficult. You know they're going to be there, but you know, we've got kids that have been integral parts on very good teams, and it's going to be interesting to see, you know, maybe that second or third or even fourth kid off a team. There's going to be a lot of arguments either way.
Yeah, I think I agree with Jeremy. I think when you're trying to look at in volleyball how to measure value from one player to the next, in terms of what they bring to their team, and like Jeremy said, in what kind of system, how do you measure maybe a setter that's by herself out there racking up the statistics compared to a system where she's sharing those sets with another, or sharing those assists, I should say, with another setter. So I think the stats sometimes are hard to go by. You got to go by the eye test a lot, and that's where obviously it gets pretty subjective.
Absolutely, and I guess I agree with what you guys are saying, but I want to go with a little bit more detailed approach as I've started my early preparation for this article. I think the hardest thing is just looking at the teams. You know, Jeremy, you talked about it. I think as you start to list the top 7, 8, you might disagree on the order, but I don't think very many people would disagree on who they are. Once you start to get down to the way I separate it into a second team, and again, that's another topic for another day. The SVC really needs to catch up and do that. I think the hardest thing is to look at the individual teams and figure out who's on. Like, for example, take a balanced team like Uniota. I could sit here, if you'd give me 30 seconds per kid, and tell you why like six different Uniota kids should be all league. Maybe Huntington has 3, 4 all league talents. Maybe Adina has 3, 4 all league talents. And obviously there's not enough room for all of those particular kids. When you get down to, like, say, a Paint Valley at the bottom of the league, they have two kids, probably aren't going to get to. Which one you going to go with? So there's a lot of discussion within the teams before you can even start to put them into an all-league format. So I would say that parity within the depth of the rosters is the biggest challenge I'm running into.
Another email this week was appreciative of the website for covering sports like cross country and soccer, and wanted to know what we thought of Southeastern's Dylan Miles playing soccer, football, and cross country all at the same time.
I think this would be a great question for Matt as a basketball coach if your point guard was playing three full sports. I've watched football games with Matt, and as his basketball players, you know, are tackled or, you know, might be hit 15, 20 times on Friday night, let alone watching them, you know, be involved in three sports. But honestly, I think it's just, it's a testament to his athleticism, but also his work ethic. And, you know, we've talked about this time and time again. When you go to a small school, when you go to a school where community plays such a big part, like it does at Southeastern, when you get kids like this that are willing to do whatever they can to help out their programs, and you're a unique talent like Miles is, I just think it's wonderful that he does all that he does. And, you know, I would encourage that. If you can do it, you know, hats off to you.
Well, I completely agree with that, Jeremy. I think kids that can do it and do it, I think it's to be admired. This would be a great topic, you know, for a segment of another show, because believe it or not, there are a lot of people that totally disagree with this, totally think you shouldn't be allowed to play multiple sports. So that, right, that would be interesting to talk about. But I personally admire it, and I think especially at a school Southeastern size, if you're going to have soccer and football and cross country and want them to be successful, you probably have to allow something like this. You know, you have to allow a great athlete like Dylan to help your teams in all those sports. And I was impressed with Coach Gallagher the other night on the scoreboard show when he said, you know, that Dylan does a good job of hopping in and out of football practice. Because what that tells you as a coach, that Coach Gallagher is working with him, you know, and allowing him to do this. I think sometimes coaches can get a little stubborn and say, no, we don't want you doing that. And so I think he's to be, Coach Gallagher's to be commended on working with him. And I would imagine the soccer coach is working with them too, to allow him to do both cross country as well. It takes coaches working together, and you know. So but again, hats off to Dylan. You know, that's Deion Sanders like right there, minus the helicopter. You know, getting from game to game, but that's impressive.
Well, I tell you this, obviously when you look at the soccer scoring and some of the things on our soccer page, Dylan's one of the unique talents in the area on the soccer field. But I think you make a great point, Matt, with the cross country and especially with football, because on the football side of things, we've made the comment, maybe Southeastern is a surprise, maybe they're not. Well, I think one of the reasons, if we're being honest, one of the reasons it is a surprise is because we've been around the SVC so long that we've known that Southeastern football has struggled to have that consistency and that tradition factor and so forth. But the one thing that Evan's done so well out there is when you look at their roster, he has a lot of different athletes involved. And I think this is I think, and I don't want to speak for Coach Gallagher, but I bet if you asked him, he would love to see Dylan maybe play more positions on the football field. But if it's one of those things where if this is the skill that I can get him for, then hey, come on over, we'll take it. You know what I mean? I'm going to get all my athletes involved. And, you know, just the other night, it was what, 41-31? I don't have that score in front of me. I want to say they 41-31. He had two field goals and obviously kicked a bunch of extra points. So that weapon is something that obviously kicking two field goals in a 10-point win played a huge role in the outcome of that game. And at the high school, we did some shows on that last year. That's such an incredible weapon. So, yeah, special athlete getting involved and helping a lot of different programs. I think that's good stuff. Fans, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and we would love to hear from you. Remember, all sorts of things going on we want to hear about from you. We want to hear about milestones. We want to hear numbers and reasoning and what some of the things we should be talking about. We want to hear your feedback on Westfall volleyball, on all-league volleyball. We want to hear your thoughts on Paint Valley chasing gold on Friday nights. And then let us know if there's a particular athlete such as Dylan. That was a great email this week. Let us know if there's other athletes we need to be talking about. Well, guys, as we always do here, we're starting to get up against the clock here a little bit, but I promised Friday night that we would get this in the show this week. Instead of a final look to the inbox, I want to go to a face-to-face question the other night. with it being such a big game. We had two, three different people from actually other schools, not just Paint Valley, Zane Trace people in this discussion. I had people from probably over half the league covered in this conversation throughout the night, and they were just simply talking to me about how they love our stat pages, which obviously we thank Adena Sports Medicine for sponsoring those. And they noticed that some coaches, some sports are better than others in terms of getting those into us every week. So the two things they started asking, and I promised that I would ask you and Jeremy and Matt, since we're up against the clock, I'll split it up here. I'll give you one. I'll give Jeremy one. The two things were scouting and team chemistry. So I'll go to the scouting part from the coaching perspective with you. How much can you really scout by looking at just the leaders of a league on a website like ours?
Not much. I mean, I'm just going to be honest with you. You know, you're not going to get a lot out of it. It's really more for to recognize the kids and for the fans just to kind of have something to look at. And I, you know, as a coach, I don't know what you're going to look at. You know, in basketball, you know, you might see, well, this kid's a good free throw shooter. But if you've been out to watch him play, you know that already. Football, you know, I don't think because, you know, Mark Clifford's name's at the top of our rushing page, some coach is going to be like, oh, wow, I didn't know they had a running back like that. I mean, you know, they've scouted them. They trade film. So the scouting thing, you know, you're not going to – I know all of us coaches can be paranoid at times, like wanting to keep our secrets locked away. But this isn't something that's going to really give a team a competitive advantage. I mean, let's be honest.
You're talking the difference between – you're not saying you have the entire stat sheet of every player, every game, every carry.
We're just talking leader. Yeah, I mean, you're talking –
we're just looking at a page that's ranking the leaders. Yeah,
you're putting the top 10 in a certain category, and if a coach is doing his homework, which most good coaches do, they're going to know who the best are anyway. You know, so it's really not an advantage.
Well, Jeremy, the other topic that came up was team chemistry. You have a lot of coaches that are kind of old school in the fact that, you know, I don't want to send in my leading rusher if my offensive line's not going to be talked about, or I don't want to send in my pitcher on strikeouts if my catcher's name's not going to appear with him, or an ERA leader if you're not going to list all of my defenders in baseball. From a team chemistry standpoint, what do you say to coaches that maybe have this particular thing about not wanting to single a kid out?
I mean, I can understand that, and I can respect that certain teams, certain coaches, they believe they want to do things the way they want to do them, regardless of, you know, if they feel like there's pressure or some people want to see this. And I understand that sometimes the parents or the kids that are requesting the stats are kind of want that to show off. But at the end of the day, if your kids are good teammates and you have a good relationship with your kids and you explain to them, you know, what their roles are and what your expectations are and let them know when they've done well and what good looks like is a lot more important than what a number says on a piece of paper. And if you can do that, you know, I don't know that it plays that big of a factor. You're always going to have issues and you're always going to have things going on within a team. And honestly, team chemistry isn't something that it either is there or isn't there. Team chemistry is something that is either controlled and handled within the team or it's not. It's right. Not like it doesn't exist. And I think sometimes people miss that. Everybody has issues. Everybody has a little jealousy here and there. It's how you deal with it that ultimately decides your success. So, that's the way I feel about that. I feel like if you have a good relationship with your players and your players have a good relationship with each other, you know, they get it regardless of what numbers say on a stat sheet.
Well, and Jeremy, let's face it, if your team chemistry is so fragile that seeing names on a stat sheet would ruin it, you're probably in trouble anyway. Wouldn't you agree?
Right, exactly. And that's what I'm saying. A lot of times I think it's an easy out for an underlying problem that was already there.
Well, guys, I knew you'd give a great discussion there. That's why I kind of wanted to just take the back seat there. And I promised those guys that, you know, I had two guys that do a lot of coaching, have done a lot of coaching, and would give a neat perspective on those two particular topics that a lot of the people were asking me to throw at you two. And I guess I just try to be consistent on this as a coach myself in a couple of different sports in the SVC. I talk about, you know, I think it's important to respect the coach. It's like we do here at the website. We offer it out there. Respect respect the coach. If they have a particular philosophy and their school's okay with that, then that's just kind of the way it needs to be. Now, if you're going to just talk to me as a coach and ask philosophy and things like that, I do think it makes for great discussion. So I think you two did a good job of hitting those two points. Enjoyed talking to the four or five people I talked to the other night out there at the game. Always enjoy when people stop and show interest in the website. So obviously there would be no website without the support of our sponsors, Valero, LCNB, YMCA, Good Health Chiropractic Center, and then, of course, Adena Sports Medicine. So until next time, guys, obviously the biggest sponsor, Triple Crown Family Fun Center, for the hard work of Bruce Knox and all the people at DBK Media Services. For Matt Combs, for Jeremy Ward, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.